Just a quick heads up, a little warning going into before this episode begins. There may be a little bit of salty language, including, I think, one F-bomb. So if you have young children, or if you have a sensitive ear of your own, or you don't want to have to explain what certain words mean, like the F-bomb, because you just don't have the time and you're not ready to have that conversation yet, you may want to skip this episode, or you may want to listen to it in advance before you let young and or impressionable people listen to the episode. Just a fair warning, a little bit of salty language early on in this episode and a couple of spots throughout. Enjoy the show. Greetings, I am Juan Sanchez Villalobos Ramirez, Chief Metallurgist to King Charles V of Spain, and I am at your service, and this is the I Have So Many Questions podcast, a show about finding enlightenment from even the most mundane interrogatories, and I will in no way, shape, or form attempt to pretend to be a Spaniard while being a Scotsman. I am your host, Brian Watson. That poor joke, or not really a joke, but a movie reference is, of course, to the cult classic Highlander, where Sean Connery played a Scotsman, or not a Scotsman, played a Spaniard who was actually an Egyptian. Welcome to the show. Here's how you can get in touch with the show. The email address is ihavequestionspodcast@gmail.com. The Twitter handle, which is the best place to follow the show, is @ihavesomanypod. Or just look up I Have So Many Questions podcast on the search function of your Twitter app. Facebook.com/ I Have So Many Questions podcast. The show's on Instagram, but don't bother. This podcast is hosted on Anchor.fm and through their mobile app. Streaming on Spotify, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, Overcast, CastBox, Pocket Cast, Breaker, Radio Public, and of course, iTunes or Apple Podcasts. If that separation has finally been made, which I think it has been. Please rate and review the show wherever you get your podcast at. It helps bring in new listeners as I work towards establishing my cult of personality, which, as always, is the sole point of this entire endeavor. That little phrase in this episode is going to have a lot more weight than it usually does. So you can't really ignore it as much as you normally do if you're a regular listener to this podcast. All about four or five of you, not including my mother. So, what's been going on? Normally in this part of the show, I have a couple of anecdotes about things that I've done recently, but I haven't really done much recently. So, I'm just going to say, this is episode 18. Please, 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 go back and listen to episode 17. That's my interview with author, podcast creator, VP Morris. A random questions episode, although the questions really weren't so random because we selected them in advance. Go back and listen to that episode. And I know she has, she's also cross-posted the episode on her show as a special episode of her audio drama, The Dead Letters. But please go back and listen to episode 17. It's my first interview on my show. I've done guest spots on a couple other shows and I've had a lot of fun doing that. But this was my first guest on this program. And she was a lot of fun to talk to, very insightful, learned a lot, especially about her process, her creative process. Creativity is an interesting thing because it's so hard to pin down. Everybody does creativity a different way. How my daughter does creativity is different than I do creativity. Last night she asked me, my kids are on fall break this week, so every night this week she's wanted to do something with the family, which really means just her mom and I. So last night, she wanted to make a haunted house out of Legos. We have a ton of Legos. Between me, the Legos I've collected over the years, from when I was a little kid to now, I have a weakness for Star Wars Lego sets, and my son, who's a big Lego person. Between the two of us, we've got a ton, and my daughter, she's gotten into Legos as well. Between the three of us, there's a lot of Legos. So last night she's like, I want to build a haunted house out of Legos. And I'm like, okay, I think we can do that. So we started making a haunted house and I'm making the walls and all this kind of stuff. And she's doing other things. She wants the haunted house to have a yard, so she's working on that. And then she wants the haunted house to be 3 stories high. But not only does she want it to be 3 stories high and completely enclosed, she wants it to be 3 stories high, completely enclosed and fully furnished. Even though you're not going to be able to see inside the house to see that it's furnished because it's got to be completely enclosed. While she's working on her thing, I'm trying to build the structure. And she's decorating it. And I'm like, why are you putting all this stuff inside here? You're not going to be able to see it because the ground floor is going to be completely consumed, covered up by the second floor. And the second floor is going to be completely covered up by the third floor. I mean, all we're really building is a structure and what goes outside it. No. Had to be fully furnished. At the same time that she's fully furnishing it, she's building in the support structure for the floors for the next level or the ceiling. So it doesn't fall in on itself. So I'm like, okay, you do your thing, I'll do my thing. This is your idea. This is your haunted house. Build it however you want. But everybody does creativity differently. And it was good in talking to VP Morris, it was good to pick her brain about her creative process because she's a writer, but she's written in 2 different forms. She's written a novel, which she's in the process of trying to get published, and she wrote an audio drama, which they're not the same thing. They can be, but you have to, how you construct them and how you format them and everything, how you write them has to be different. So she's done writing in 2 different ways, and it was good to pick her brain about that process, to learn something from someone else about how they do things that I might, and you as the listener, my loyal audience of 6 or 7 of you, not including my mother, something that we can take away, maybe apply it in our own creative process or in my own creative process. So by all means, go back and listen to episode 17, my special interview with my special guest, VP Morris, and go back and listen to the other episodes as well. Some are good. Some are not so good. Some are really good. Evidently, a lot of people like the incel episode. Personally, I think it was because of the profanity. I could be wrong. I've noticed that podcasts with a lot of swearing do really well. Podcasts where there aren't a lot of swearing, not as much. As I say at the beginning of every episode of this show, except for maybe the quick hits, this entire endeavor is about building my cult of personality. This is a form of self-aggrandizement, vanity, ego-inflating, whatever you want to call it. It's about building my cult of personality. It's a term we hear all the time. It's a term that is particularly relevant these days, given who the president of the United States is. There is no better textbook example of a cult of personality in the 21st century than Donald Trump. If you look at his rallies, if you look at the people that support him, if you look at the fact that there's absolutely nothing that comes out about that man that shakes their faith and their loyalty to him, there's no better example of a cult of personality than Trump. I mean, in 2016, Trump said he could shoot somebody on Fifth Avenue in Manhattan and not lose any votes. And he wasn't wrong. Personally, I don't think there's anything. There could be video footage of Trump engaging in pedophilia and he wouldn't lose any votes because there were people that would say it's a deep fake. Or you might even get some people that says, hey, it's no big deal. Or that was a long time ago, he's better now. Something. There would be an excuse, a justification for that behavior for him. That's how far down the rabbit hole they are. And that's not unusual for a cult of personality. It's a term we hear all the time. And Trump's not alone in that regard. Vladimir Putin, in some respects, is a cult of personality. Any authoritarian leader engages in a cult of personality. So that's what this show is about. That's what this episode is about. We're going to talk about cults of personality. And of course, my primary source is my source of sources, Wikipedia, which I found, I don't know why, but I found their focus to be a little too narrow, because a lot of what's on the Wikipedia page for Cult of Personality is very politically based, power based, governmentally based. And I was thinking, there's all kinds of cults of personality that have nothing to do with politics. Power these days in a lot of ways is subjective. It's not just about having political power. And that's kind of the way it's always been. I mean, think about the term itself, cult of personality. Look at the first word, cult. Every cult begins with a charismatic leader, whether it's David Koresh and the Branch Davidians, whether it's Jim Jones in Jonestown, whether it's Marshall Applewhite? The people that shaved their heads and supposedly castrated themselves and then committed mass suicide while wearing Nikes in San Diego because there was a spaceship behind the Hale-Bopp comet that was going to take them away. That's a cult. Manson, cult. Any religion begins with a cult of personality almost. And I'm not just talking a cult, but it begins with a charismatic figure, charismatic leader. You think the Old Testament, Moses. Moses led the Jews, freed the Jews, led the Jews out of Egypt. He was a charismatic leader. Jesus, charismatic leader. John the Baptist, charismatic leader. Muhammad, charismatic leader. Buddha, charismatic leader. I don't know if there's a charismatic leader in Hinduism. Confucianism, Confucius. If you think in martial terms, Caesar, cult of personality. And that was before he became an emperor. That was when he was a general. Patton, cult of personality. MacArthur, Washington, George Washington. Any military leader has to be a cult of personality because a military leader has to persuade the people that serve under his command that he knows what he's doing, and he has to persuade them to be willing to die for him, to die under his command or at his command. That's not just following orders. That's faith, okay? That's believing in someone. It's not so much believing in something. The idea is important, but the idea is meaningless without someone to convey it, without someone to emphasize it, without someone to embody it, to live it. The founding fathers, I mean, we treat them individually and as collectively as a cult of personality. We view them individually because they were individuals, but we also view them kind of monolithically, which they weren't, but it's kind of how we view them. The Pope, regardless of who the Pope is, it's a cult of personality. You think about not so much Benedict. Pope Benedict was not really a cult of personality. He was a technocrat. No charisma, didn't really inspire anybody. Not like the current Pope, but a real cult of personality, if you want to talk about the Catholic Church, John Paul II, he was a cult of personality. The royal family, Princess Diana was a cult of personality. Nobody liked Chuck. Nobody really likes Queen Elizabeth. Well, I mean, they like her, but there's no personality there. She's the title. She's the queen. Well, anybody can be the queen. She's just been the queen for a really long time. So she's no longer Elizabeth II. She's really just the queen. Diana, on the other hand, and I think you see this with her kids, with her boys, and I think you see this with their wives, they're not the title. They're not the queen or the prince or the duchess or whatever. They're Kate. They're Meghan. They're Harry. They're William. All because of Diana. Prince Charles is not a cult of personality. Camilla is not a cult of personality. Prince Philip, their father, or Chuck's father, not a cult of personality. Diana was, and her kids are, and their spouses are. But a cult of personality, if you think about it in the 21st century modern social media age, what is an Instagram influencer or a YouTube influencer other than a cult of personality? Joe Rogan is a cult of personality. Jordan Peterson is a cult of personality. Who else? Of course, I draw a blank as I'm recording. Martin Luther King was a cult of personality. Malcolm X was a cult of personality. But it doesn't have to involve political power. which is the one thing that bugged me about the Wikipedia thing, or the Wikipedia entry. Anybody that has a media platform, whether it's a streamer on Twitch or a streamer on YouTube or a podcast host, anybody who has a platform, bloggers back in the day, anybody who has a platform where they can get their message out without a gatekeeper or without a filter, and that message through that person resonates with a group of people of varying sizes. It doesn't have to be a large group of people. It just has to be a group of people. And they are captivated by the message, but more importantly, they're captivated by the messenger and what that messenger represents. That's a cult of personality. Let's talk about the Wikipedia entry. A cult of personality or cult of the leader arises when a country's regime, or more rarely an individual, I don't agree with that, uses the techniques of mass media, propaganda, the big lie, spectacle, the arts, patriotism, and government-organized demonstrations and rallies to create an idealized, heroic, and worshipful image of a leader, often through unquestioning flattery and praise. Look no further than North Korea. Everything about North Korea, everything in North Korea, is about whoever is the leader. Whether it's Kim Il-sung, who founded North Korea, or if it was Kim Jong-il, his son, or the current leader, Humpty Dumpty, Kim Jong-un, all of it. North Korea is all of it, is about mass media, propaganda, the big lie, spectacle, the arts, patriotism, and government-organized demonstrations and rallies to create an idealized, heroic, and worshipful image of a leader through unquestioning flattery and praise, even when he's killing his relatives, using VX nerve gas, or blowing them up with anti-aircraft weapons as punishment. Cult of personality is established by modern social engineering techniques, usually by the state or the party, and a one-party state and dominant party states is often seen in totalitarian or authoritarian countries. Let me go through my abbreviated list of examples over the years. Juan Perón of Argentina, think of Evita, the musical. Chiang Kai-shek in Taiwan after losing the Communist Revolution in China. Fidel Castro in Cuba. François Duvalier in Haiti. The Ayatollah Khomeini in Iran. This would have been back in the 80s. Saddam Hussein in Iraq. There is a cult of personality for you. The Kim family in North Korea, as I just mentioned. Ferdinand Marcos and Rodrigo Duterte in the Philippines. There's a documentary, I think, that just came out about Imelda Marcos, Ferdinand Marcos' wife, who went into exile, I believe, in Hawaii. It's not a flattering documentary about her. This was the dictator's wife who supposedly had 1,000 pairs of shoes. Francisco Franco in Spain. That would have been fascists. Ceausescu in Romania, who was publicly hanged. Hugo Chavez in Venezuela. Well, yeah, he turned that place into a dumpster fire. Ho Chi Minh in Vietnam. And Mobutu in Zaire, which is now the Democratic Republic of Congo. Those are just some examples of cult of personality as listed by Wikipedia. Interestingly, the modern use of the term cult of personality came to prominence in 1956 when Nikita Khrushchev, who was the leader of the Soviet Union at the time, gave a secret speech called On the Cult of Personality and Its Consequences, given on the final day of the 20th Congress of the Communist Party of the Soviet Union. In the speech, Khrushchev, in effect the leader of the country, criticized the lionization and idealization of Joseph Stalin, who had just died, and by implication, his communist contemporary Mao Zedong. Khrushchev and Mao did not like each other. Come to think of it, Stalin and Mao didn't like each other. Mao really just didn't like anybody in the Soviet Union. He thought he could do it better. Khrushchev criticized the cult of personality as being contrary to Marxist doctrine. The speech was later made public and was part of the de-Stalinization process the Soviet Union went through after Stalin died. Throughout history, monarchs and the heads of state were often held in enormous reverence and inputted with superhuman qualities. Principles such as the divine right of kings in medieval Europe, rulers were said to hold office by the will of God. Ancient Egypt, Imperial Japan, this would be Imperial Japan up through the end of World War II. At first, the term cult of personality had no political connotations. but was instead closely related to the romantic cult of genius. The political use of the phrase came first in a letter from Karl Marx to a German political writer named Wilhelm Blass in 1877. Quote, "Neither of us cares a straw of popularity. Let me cite one proof of this. Such was my aversion to the personality cult that at the time of the International, which is capitalized, when plagued by numerous moves to accord me public honor, I never allowed one of these to enter the domain of publicity." End quote. Personality cult is criticized by Marx, and then it's later criticized by Khrushchev because of Marx, or more to the point, Marxist doctrine. Historian Jan. Historian Jan Plamper has written, "The modern-day personality cults display five characteristics that set them apart from their predecessors. The modern cults are secular and anchored in popular sovereignty. Their objects are all males. They target the entire population, not only the well-to-do or just the ruling class. They use mass media, and they exist where the mass media can be controlled enough to inhibit the introduction of rival cults." I don't agree with this definition. The cults are secular. There are modern religious cults. There are. Anytime a new religion pops up. L. Ron Hubbard was a cult of personality. David Miscavige, who's now running the Church of Scientology, is a cult of personality. Tom Cruise, in Scientology terms, is a cult of personality. Scientology is more or less a religion. But religion, any megachurch leader is a cult of personality. Joel Osteen is a cult of personality. Rick Warren, 10 years ago, was a cult of personality. Pat Robertson, any televangelist, is a cult of personality. So it's not secular. I already talked about the Pope. I guess I don't understand what it means by being anchored in popular sovereignty. I guess I'm not understanding the connotation there. Nobody holds a gun to your head to make you join a cult. You join a cult without even knowing it. One day, you're walking along. The next day, you know, you're listening, and then you stop to listen to somebody. And the next day, you're in a cult because you got sucked in. So I'm not entirely sure how it's anchored in popular sovereignty these days. In his 2013 paper titled "What Is Character and Why It Really Does Matter," Thomas Wright states, quote, "The cult of personality phenomenon refers to the idealized, even godlike public image of an individual consciously shaped and molded through constant propaganda and media exposure. As a result, one is able to manipulate others based entirely on the influence of public personality. The cult of personality perspective focuses on the often shallow, external images that many public figures cultivate to create an idealized and heroic image," unquote. So basically, if you've got a platform and you get people to pay attention to you, you can become a cult of personality. Look at the fucking Kardashians. Those people do absolutely nothing. They have never done anything. I was very tempted to use a double negative there, but I stopped myself. Cult of personality. Kanye West is a cult of personality. Howard Stern is a cult of personality. Or was. Probably still is, but he was. All you need is a platform, an opportunity, and you can become a cult of personality. And I don't even think it has to be, I mean, it's clear manipulation. I mean, you only see what they want you to see. I mean, the whole point of the cult is manipulation. Manipulation is just an extreme form of persuasion. It's when you take your persuasive abilities and you pervert them into various to get people to think or believe things that they wouldn't otherwise do on their own. Manipulation is not always a bad thing. Manipulation can be a good thing, or not necessarily a good thing, but it can have a positive effect. Every time you guilt trip your kid to do the right thing, you know, you're manipulating them. Cult leaders, I mean, that's what they do. They manipulate, you know, it's all about manipulation. You only see and hear what they want you to see and hear. That's how they do their thing. Adrian Theodore Popin, I have no idea who that is, defines cult of personality as a, quote, "quantitatively exaggerated and qualitatively extravagant public demonstration of praise of the leader," unquote. He also identifies three causal, quote, "necessary but not sufficient structural conditions and a path-dependent chain of events which, together, lead to the cult formation. A particular combination of patrimonialism and clientelism, lack of dissidence, and systematic falsification pervading society's culture, unquote. So basically, father figure, no one can question anything, and systematic lying. Thomas Wright in 2013 reported, quote, "It is becoming evident that the charismatic leader, especially in politics, has increasingly become the product of media and self-exposure," unquote. Not wrong. John F. Kennedy was a cult of personality. Now, granted, it wasn't until after he died, and I think a large part of his death had a lot to do with that. But he became a cult of personality. He, you know, because he was youthful and Camelot and Jackie and all this kind of stuff. And he was a war hero because he fought in World War II and all that. But he was a cult of personality. Ronald Reagan, oh dear Lord. Has anyone in the last 30 years, except for Trump, been more of a cult of personality in American politics than Ronald Reagan? And really, that didn't happen until after he was gone. I think 8 years of Bill Clinton might have had something to do with that. Reagan was a cult of personality. He didn't want to be. He didn't try to be. It spontaneously occurred without him doing anything to propagate it. Cults of personality can emerge with people even when they don't want to be. Any celebrity runs that risk. Often a single leader became associated with this revolutionary transformation and came to be treated as a benevolent guide for the nation without whom the transformation to a better future could not occur. This has generally been the justification for personality cults that arose in totalitarian societies. Think the fascists. Think the communists. Hitler, Mussolini, Stalin, Mao. Plenty of other examples. Today, in 2019, it's a lot easier to become a cult of personality. Again, it doesn't matter the size of the audience as long as you have the audience. And that audience is exceptionally devoted to you and to your message. All you got to do is become Tyler Durden. But if you host a podcast or if you stream on YouTube or Twitch, you post videos on either of those platforms or other platforms. If you have your own subreddit, influencers, it doesn't really matter. As long as you have that platform and you have a message that resonates, and not just the message that resonates, but the how you deliver that message resonates. We hear about this a lot with social media culture and online culture with disaffected young men, usually disaffected young white men, incels, the Jordan Peterson phenomenon and how his message resonates with young white men. Joe Rogan, similar circumstance. His show and his demeanor and the way he conducts himself resonates with young white men. And so much so that you have circumstances where the cult of personality, so concerned are we about the cult of personality or the potential for a cult of personality, that we look at a movie like Joker, which just came out last month. This is one of the origin stories of the Batman villain, the Joker, played by Joaquin Phoenix. We don't really need an origin story for the Joker. The Joker is a force of nature. He does not require an origin story. See The Dark Knight. But I digress. The big concern about Joker when it came out, or when it was about to come out, was the Aurora effect. Everybody remembers the Aurora, Colorado movie theater shooting when The Dark Knight Rises came out, where that crazy guy whose name I cannot remember put on all the body armor, had the guns. I think his hair was green. I don't think he was wearing Joker makeup, but he walks into, because I think he had a mask on, but he walked into the movie theater and he said he was the Joker and he started shooting people. There was that concern that guy who was supposedly motivated by the Joker, and in particular Heath Ledger's Joker, the concern was that this film, that Joker with Joaquin Phoenix playing Joker, would inspire other disaffected young men, inspire them to do some of the things that happen in the Joker movie. In essence, the media hysteria was that the Joker, as a fictional cult of personality, would inspire real life action. In the 90s, Timothy McVeigh, the Oklahoma City bomber, was inspired by two things and indirectly inspired by two cults of personality. He was inspired by actually three cults of personality. He was inspired by what happened at Ruby Ridge with Randy Weaver's family, the siege at Ruby Ridge. The cult of personality in that instance would be Randy Weaver, who was an anti-government white supremacist, but it was the government's actions at Ruby Ridge that partly inspired McVeigh. So indirectly, McVeigh was inspired by Randy Weaver. The other event that inspired Timothy McVeigh was Waco, the Branch Davidian compound. What happened to David Koresh and his followers, the government action there. McVeigh wasn't a Branch Davidian, he wasn't a follower of Koresh, but he was there. He was there in Waco, more so inspired by his growing hostility to the federal government. But he was there in Waco. He saw it happen live. McVeigh was indirectly inspired by David Koresh, a second cult of personality. The third cult of personality that David Koresh, or that Timothy McVeigh was inspired by, was the writer of the Turner Diaries. Turner Diaries was this white nationalist, racist, anti-government manifesto couched in fiction. I can't remember who wrote it. I'm not even sure. There is an author, but I can't remember who it is. But I believe it is a first-person narrative. So the narrator of the Turner Diaries is a cult of personality. And through the author, indirectly, a cult of personality. So McVeigh was inspired by cults of personality. They were just, he was indirectly inspired by two real-life ones and inspired by a fictional one to carry out his actions. But that was the fear with Joker, is that you'd have something similar, that you'd have disaffected young white men. In particular, there was a concern about incels who would see the Joker movie, Now, granted, these concerns were without anybody at that point in time knowing what was actually in the Joker movie. Nobody knew what the plot was. Nobody knew how things were going to progress. All they knew was that it was about the Joker. And the concern was that it was going to idealize the Joker and therefore inspire mentally ill or disaffected young white men to do horrible things. Movie's been out a month. Nothing like that has happened. And a lot of the fervor about the Joker movie died as soon as the movie came out because everybody figured out what was in it. And I've already kind of figured out that, there was no there. That is the power in the modern age, in the 21st century digital social media online era that we live in. That is how easy it is to develop a cult of personality. Conservatives tend to gravitate toward cults of personality, at least in the modern era, more so than liberals do. But I think it's a lot easier to do that with conservatives than it is with liberals, because conservative causes there's not as many of them. They're much fewer. There's not as much splintering, which makes it easier for people to emerge. Conservatives also tend to be more religious. Religious people will tend to be more open to receiving personalities. Think about if you're a religious person, if you're a Christian, why do you go to one church and not to another? Why do you go to the same church all the time? Episcopalians only go to one Episcopal church, or Methodists only go to one Methodist church? Because there's all kinds of, in your general area, there's probably all kinds of Episcopalian and Methodist churches in your area. It wouldn't be too far to go. Now, a lot of it's probably got to do with geography. You're going to go to the one closest to your house. Convenience. But another reason is that how much of that has to do with who runs the church? Who is the pastor of the church? If you're Catholic and you go to Mass, how much of which church you go to or which cathedral you go to for Mass, how much of that has to do with who is the priest or the Monsignor or the Cardinal or the Bishop? How much of it has to do with that? And if that has an influence on where you go for your religious services, if you go to a synagogue, how much of it has to do with the rabbi? Not just what he says, but who he is. How important is that? If that is important to you, you're kind of influenced, you're kind of a part of a small very weak cult of personality. Have you ever had a boss was absolutely wonderful and you would do anything that they said to do without a question, without hesitation, because you had that much faith in them. You believed in them that much. You were so invested in them that you didn't question it because you didn't have to. You didn't need to. I've had that boss before. It is, in a very weak, watered-down sense, a cult of personality, especially when you get a whole bunch of people who think the same way about that boss. I mean, that's kind of what a boss has to do, is inspire a degree of loyalty and unquestionable fealty to get the results that they need to get. In a modern political sense, you know, look at, not besides Trump, Bernie Sanders, Bernie Bros. Bernie Sanders has a solid 15% in every poll that's been out there since the 2020 Democratic primary started. Bernie Sanders has been at a solid 14 to 15%, and he's rarely, if ever, wavered from that number. You look at 2016, the number of people that said Bernie or bust was, it wasn't a great number, but it was significant. It was significant to make a difference, where they said, it's either my guy or nobody at all. Trump was that way with the Republican primary. Had a bunch of people vote for him that hadn't voted before in primaries or hadn't voted at all. They only voted for him. They weren't going to vote for Jeb or Marco Rubio or Ted Cruz or Ben Carson, whoever. They only voted for him. Same with Bernie Sanders. And it's that way with Bernie now. He's got a diehard base that's never going to leave him. It's either him or nothing at all. And in 2016, a lot of them didn't vote at all because it wasn't him, or it wasn't going to be Hillary because she's the one that beat him. And from their point of view, she cheated to do it, which wasn't really true. But they said, my guy or nothing at all. And that's still that the case now. Do I think that that 15%, if Elizabeth Warren were to become the Democratic nominee, do I think that 15% of Bernie supporters, do I think they would go to Warren? I think more so than they would have for Hillary, than they did for Hillary in 2016. But I don't think it would have been by much, because it's Bernie or nothing at all. And no other Democrat has that kind of loyalty. And it's not Bernie's message. Well, it is Bernie's message, but it's also Bernie. Bernie's a socialist, dare I say a communist, but he's a socialist. That's what he is. He lives, he eats, he breathes socialism. Everything that he's doing is about socialism. Bernie Sanders doesn't care about liberty or individual freedom. All he cares about is class, and that's why he's a socialist. But there's lots of socialists out there. Not all of them are going to get support to be president. Look at Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. She's becoming a cult of personality, and she knows it, and she's cultivating it, and she's building on it. She knows that she's a cult of personality, that she's developing one, and she's taking advantage of it. She's trying to exploit it. In that way, she's not much dissimilar to Trump. Trump knows he's a cult of personality. Trump knows that he has a rabid, loyal following, that if he were to go out there and if he were to say, kill all the Democrats, his people would go out and kill all the Democrats, or at least try to. And even if they didn't, even if he explicitly said, go kill these people, they may not do it, but they're also not going to leave him either. They're not going to say, whoa, this guy's out of his fucking mind. No, they'd provide some kind of justification. They'd make excuses for him. Oh, he was joking. He wasn't being serious. There's nothing illegal about him saying that. His First Amendment rights, something. Even if the economy went to shit because of his policies and all those people lost their jobs and lost all their income, they'd say it wasn't his fault. It's the liberals. It's the globalists. It's the Chinese. It's somebody else. It's not him. It's not his fault. Even if he flat out said, yeah, you know what? This is totally my fucking fault. Which had never happened. But if he were to do that, they'd still say, nah, oh, look at him. He's just being humble. He had nothing to do with this. He's just being modest. That's how great of a guy he is. Cult of personality. But in the modern 21st century social media online world, interconnected world that we live in. It's so much easier to develop those cults of personality, those little niches of worship. But in the modern era, it's not all that hard to do. The opportunities are much greater and the difficulty level is a lot less. It's not that hard to do anymore, which is why I have a podcast now, because they shouldn't be able to have all the fun. I want to get in on that. If anything, just to not have to do so much work every day. I mean, it's like the show. I've been bitching forever on Twitter that I need an intern just so I don't have to do the editing. I mean, that's a cult of personality. If only I could do that. But time will tell. But what do you think? How do you feel about cults of personality? Do you follow a cult of personality? Are you yourself a cult of personality? Do you aspire, like moi, to be a cult of personality yourself? Are you a MAGA fan? Are you a Trump follower? Are you a Bernie bro? I don't know, is Elizabeth Warren becoming a cult of personality? I'm not thinking so, but I could be wrong. Are you a Kardashian fan? Are you a fan of only one Kardashian? Do you absolutely love and worship Kim, but you can't stand Khloe and Kourtney? Or are you a Kylie versus Kendall? Or are you a Kris Jenner person? Are you a Caitlyn Jenner cult of personality? Although Caitlyn Jenner, I think, would have to have a personality first in order to become a cult of personality. Ooh, that raises an interesting question. In order to become a cult of personality, do you have to have a personality? But what do you think about cults of personality? Let me know. The email address is ihavequestionspodcast@gmail.com. The Twitter handle, which is the best way to reach me, because I am on the Twitter all the freaking time, all day long. I may need counseling. The Twitter handle is @IHaveSoManyPod. Facebook.com/IHaveSoManyQuestionsPodcast. That's a mouthful. That's a big URL. Please rate and review the show wherever you get your podcasts at, especially if you get them through Apple or through Spotify. I think you can do ratings on Spotify. But please rate and review the show. Comments, questions, criticisms, or concerns are always appreciated through whatever means you see fit to contact me or the show, which are one and the same. If you listen to the show through Anchor, through their website, you can leave voice messages. My Anchor page for the show allows you to leave voice recordings. So you can tell me in your own words, in your own vocal dictation, what you think of me, this show, or life in general. This has been I Have So Many Questions. I have been your host, Brian Watson, who is not Scottish, nor Spanish, nor Egyptian. I'm a mutt. Thank you for your time and for your patronage. Please go back and listen to episode 17, my special interview with my special guest, VP Morris. Listen to it as many times as you want. Listen to this episode as many times as you want. In fact, listen to all the episodes as many times as you want. Memorize them like Star Wars, if you must. I have no problem with that. Because as I have said, this entire endeavor is about my own self-gratification. I've been Brian Watson. This has been I Have So Many Questions. Thank you for your time and your patronage. Good night, Cleveland.
For the podcast, Hot Tea and Cold Cases, two best friends spilling the hot tea on all the cold cases, I'm Alexa.
And I'm Allie. Join us as we uncover the world's most interesting cold cases.
Are you a true crime lover and a fan of the paranormal?
Tune in every other week for our sub-series Hot Tea and Frosty Hauntings, where we discuss all things haunted and spooky. You can find us on our website at hotteacoldcasespodcast.com.
Join us for some true crime drama, crazy theories, and creepy hauntings.
And most importantly, all of our best friend shenanigans. Until next time.
Allie and Alexa. Morbidology is a weekly true crime podcast hosted by me, Emily G. Thompson, author of Unsolved Child Murders and co-author of Unsolved Murders, True Crime Cases Uncovered.
911 emergency.
My son shot my husband. I need an ambulance. He's bleeding.
Using audio from 911 calls, interrogations, trial testimony, and interviews, Morbidology takes a look at some of the most mysterious and disturbing crimes from all across the world.
Do you know why you're here?
For a home invasion gone terribly wrong.
From shocking murders to missing children, we focus on a variety of cases and put you, the listener, right into the middle of the investigation. Listen to Morbidology now on iTunes, Spreaker, Stitcher, Podbean, and wherever else you get your podcasts.